pay test on the Bears. I don't want to pay test on the Bears. Pay test on the Bears by the two drops. That middle of the island. We learned from the Mishnah, Kavas HaBoim HaOmer, we said that the sheep that brought the korban together with the Omer, like any other sheep for an Ola, as we'll learn two Mishnahs from now, on Sadek on the Bays, like any Ola, it requires Nisachim. So it being a sheep, usually it has one Issur in the flower, as is true of any sheep. But in this case, you have a double size mincha, two Issurim rather than one. However, the amount of oil is still the same. You still have three logim of oil rather than six. Okay. So let's talk about that. Turn it up on them. The Pasuk says, Minchasa Shnei Issurim. The Pasuk says, regarding that sheep that comes with the Omer, the mincha of it is two Issurim. So that teaches you that the sheep that comes with the Omer has a double size mincha, because a regular keves everywhere else in the Torah has only one Issur. So you would think the same way as the mincha is doubled in size, so the amount of wine and so the amount of wine should also be doubled. Note, the pasuk still says the libation, the netzach, is still a quarter of a hin of wine. So you log him just like for every
other.
So then you would think, okay, like this. Fine. So then we're going to say logically, okay, the Torah doesn't tell us to double the wine, because after all, the wine doesn't really have anything directly to do with the flour. The wine is not mixed together with the mincha. But you would think that the oil at least ought to be doubled, considering that you could have two or six more of them, in other words, a half a hin of oil, because after all, the oil is mixed together with the flour. So if you doubled the flour, then you should be doubling the oil as well. No, chamablaim of a niska. Therefore, the expression in the pasuk is v'nisko yayin revi'is hahin, and from that word, v'nisko means kol nesachav layir el revi'is. It means all of its nesachin, whether we're talking about the oil or whether we're talking about the wine, both of which are liquids, and like we said yesterday, both of them can be called nesachin, should be exactly a revi'is hahin, so only three logos.
So nisko applies to the oil and to the wine.
So the question is, my Talmud, how exactly are we learning that from the word v'nisko, that it refers to both? Amar Rav Elazar, because you have a kriyuksi. The word in the pasuk of it, it's a kri uksiv, where it's written one way in the kri uksiv, where ksiv is written one way in the Sefer Torah or in Tanakh in general, and it's read a different way. Sometimes there's some they have you have many of those throughout formation throughout. Yeah. Some of them are minor things, like here we have a hey at the end, which could just as well be pronounced with a cholam, so it is written the Sefer Torah with a hey, but you pronounce it benitzoi. You have bigger changes between the kri and the ksiv. Ones in the Tochacha, for example, where it uses a less delicate word for certain kinds of diseases or whatever, and in the ksiv, in the kri rather, the way we read it, we replace it with a more delicate word, whatever. Anyway, the point is, here we have a kri ksiv, where it says v'nisga, and we read it v'nisga, ksiv v'nisga, v'karina v'nisgoi. So what does that mean? Why do we have a Lashon Mekeva and a Lashon Zachar in the same word? It means, Niskos de Mincha to Niskoi de Yayin. It means, her Nesef, meaning Mincha, is Lashon Mekeva. So then with a cometh and a hey, and that usually marks Lashon Mekeva. So Niskos, her Nesef, meaning the one that goes together with the Mincha, namely the oil, should be Kniskoi de Yayin, should be like his Nisoch of the wine being Lashon Zachar. Yayin being Lashon Zachar. Therefore, my Yayin Revius, so therefore, since the wine is a Revius idea, as it says in the Pasuk, Avshem and Nami Revius, from the fact that it's written in the Torah of Niska, we learn the same thing is true as far as the oil. It's only a Revius idea and only three logim
Nasa. Niska means the oil.
Niska would mean the oil that's associated with the Mincha. Yeah. Shemin itself is also Lashon Zachar, but Mincha is Lashon Mekeva.
Yeah.
Whereas Yayin is Lashon Zachar.
Yeah.
So therefore, yeah.
Niska refers to oil.
Niska refers to the oil that goes with the mincha, with the so component of the mincha, namely the oil, and then niska refers to the wine. Okay. So that's how we know the din in our Mishnah that even though you have twice as much flour, you only have the same amount of oil in a wine.
Can you draw a halacha from Kriyas Ki?
Apparently you can, just like you were asking yesterday, can you draw a halacha from Gematria? Obviously, if the Gemara is doing it, then you can do it. You have the general question, you have the more general question, is it that we're actually learning the halachas from the psukim, like without the psukim we wouldn't know the halacha, or is it that the halacha exists independently of the psukim, but we use the psukim as sort of like an asmasa, but stronger than that, because after all these are dinim garaisa, but whatever, yeah, we have a lot of argument about that, this is the place for it, but whatever, yeah. Fine. Okay, now we learned, so we're talking about Nesachim, but now we have like this. Usually, as we're going to learn on Tzadik Amud Beis in the Mishnah, usually only Korbanos that are voluntarily have Nesachim with them. So, for example, not a Chatas and Asham. However, there is one exception. We were talking yesterday about the Korbanos of the Metzorah on Teches and Alas. We said that a Metzorah, if he's rich, brings three Korbanos, and all of them are accompanied by Nesachim. If he's poor, he brings two of them as birds instead, and birds, as we're going to learn later on, don't have Nesachim. And the third one is an animal. The third one is an Asham, so you still have to bring that one as a sheep. And uniquely for an Asham, that one comes with Nesachim.
That's if he's rich?
No, whether he's rich or poor. We discussed yesterday that even if he has to wait till he has to raise the money. Until he raises the money, he still doesn't have his full power. He doesn't have his full kapara. He can't enter the Beis Mikdash. He can't eat kodshim. Yeah. Anyway, so the point is, therefore, that you have an Asham Mitzvah is unique among all of the obligatory korbanos in that it needs Nesach. Suppose you have an Asham Mitzvah where they shechted it, or did one or the other of Avodah, I guess, Shalai Lishmai, where we learned back at the beginning of Tzvachim, and also in Arma Sechta, that an Asham, like most Korbanos, doesn't become posel like that. It means that you still continue bringing it as the Korban that it's supposed to be. It's that the owner wasn't Yosef's Korb, and he has to bring another one. In this case, Ton Nesachim. The Korban is still going to require the regular Nesachim of an Ayo to be brought with it.
So it's not it.
Well, in other words, that's it. No, in other words, the point is that you see, well, not necessarily. I mean, he could still bring the Nesachim. The Pashas, it still means he could bring the Nesachim days later, but he's still obligated to bring them. In after Omer came, because, says Rabbi Yechanan, if you're not going to say that, if you're going to say that now that it's Shalom Lishma, then it becomes, now it's not really an Asham Mitzvah anymore, you're going to allow to effectively change it to another kind of carbon, that's a problem. No, just some other kind of carbon, that's a problem. Salasa, then you've made it possible. Because you can't change it at this point after it was shechted to another carbon, because it was designated as an Asham, you can't designate it to a different type of carbon, like an Olo or Shlomim or what have you, because it was already designated before as an Asham. Even also Rashi, Miyocha Sadashi adds also, even there is a concept that we've learned before that an Asham can turn into an Ola. However, it requires Nisak L'Ri'iyah. It has to have been redesignated as an Ola. We discussed, does it have to be that Beis Din told him to do that or whatever it is. The point is, here where it was already shefted, obviously it's too late to do that.
So it can't
be turned into an Ola, and it can't even be turned into another kind of, it can't be turned into another kind of Asham, which therefore would not require Nesachim necessarily. In other words, it still has to stay an Asham Mitzvah, and if it's an Asham Mitzvah, then it still requires Nesachim. So that's what Rabbi Yechanan is saying. If you were to say that you're allowed to bring it without Nesachim, effectively what you've done is you've passed it and you've turned it into another carbon. And since you can't turn it into another carbon after it's shechted, then the only thing to do is to bring the Nesachim. After it's shechted, you can't turn it into another carbon.
Before you can.
Before, we talked about Nisak L'Ri'iyah, whatever, but yeah, I don't know, you have Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, what it takes to be Nisak L'Ri'iyah, but yeah, in principle, you can have an Asham, can be redesignated as another carbon, but after it's shechted, it's too late.
The chiddush
that we're saying over here is most other Ashramas, it wouldn't be an issue because they don't come with Nesachim anyway. If a person brings an Asham Gzelus or Asham Me'ilos or what have you, which don't come with Nesachim, so fine, it was shechted Shalom Lishma, no problem, continue offering it as an Asham. The guy has to bring a new Asham, but nothing else. Here, you have to bring a new Asham and new Nesachim. First of all, you have to bring the Nesachim for the old one, and then he has to later on bring a new Asham with new Nesachim. That's really the Yechanan point. Because this Asham uniquely comes with Nesachim, and to take away the Nesachim will turn it into a different kind of carbon, then you have to have the Nesachim.
So you have to bring the old Nesachim.
And then you have to bring a new carbon and a new Nesachim.
Right? That's just because it's...
Because that's what it is. Because this is the type of carbon it is. It comes with Nesachim. okay, the question is, Master sort of Menashe Bagada, Elameasa, well, by that logic, if you're going to say like that, let's consider some other cases where you have a carbon that comes together with special things that are unique to that kind of carbon. First of all, the one in our Mishnah.
It's not the only case.
Right. So, for example, let's look at our Mishnah. We have the case of our Mishnah, of the sheath that comes with the Omer, where we said it has a double mincha in terms of flour, but the same amount of oil and wine. So, Elameasa, by the same logic, Keves HaBoima Omer, Sheshachta Shalol Lishma, by the same logic, the Keves that comes with the Omer, if you shechted it Shalol Lishma, Kehe Mincha Tekfula, by the same logic, you should still have to bring the extra large Mincha with it, Sheim Yata Omer Ken Salto, because by the same logic, you can say that if you don't do that, then you've effectively changed it into a different type of carbon, a different type of oil, or what have you. And similarly, that's why the Gemara is bringing this in for you. Similarly, another example, the Tomid Shal Shachar should stop the Shalai Lishmai. Another example might be, if you shechted the carbon Tomid of the morning, Shalai Lishmai. Now, one thing that takes place, one special thing that takes place with the Tomid Shal Shachar, after the wood pile has been set up on the Mizeah, at some point, after the wood pile has been set up on the Mizeah, you have to have a Kohen take two Gzirei Eitzim, that we say every day in davening, the Siddur Shnei Gzirei Eitzim, that the Kohen takes two logs or two pieces of wood and places them on the wood pile over there after it's set up. So like these aren't part of the rest of the pile. And yeah, there's a cost of it has to be there. So by the same logic, therefore,
he wants to do what?
When they're in, as part of the process of bringing the Kohen to Tomid, what do we say every morning? Now, by having the Sada Seda Maracha, Maracha Gola, Maracha Shnei Shokteris, then Siddur Shnei Gzirei Eitzim, and then a little bit later comes the Tomid, Shendama Tomid, and so forth. So part of the process of the Tomid, bringing the Tomid in the morning, that you have actually with both of the Tomid, in the morning and the afternoon, part of the process is bringing these two logs of wood. The difference is that, and the Gemara explains this in Yoma, the difference is that in the morning, by the morning Tomid, you have one Kohen bringing the two pieces. In the afternoon Tomid, you have two Kohen, and each one bringing one piece. But you have Shnei Gzirei Eitzim, those are special for the Tomid. So therefore, by the same logic of Rabbi Yochanan, that any time you have a special feature with a carbon, you have to still have that feature, otherwise you're changing it into another kind of carbon. Well then, Tomid Chavent Shal Shachar Shal Shachar Shal Shachar, if you were to shech the Tomid Shal Shachar Shal Shachar, Tehei Mincha Tekfula, by that logic, if Mincha ought to be double in size, it should still require that the one Kohen brings up the two logs of wood, because if not, then you're going to say that you've passed it because you've turned it into another kind of carbon. And another example, the Talmud Chabon Abayim, similarly, with the Talmud Chabon Abayim, if you shechted at Shalosh Shmo, you should still have to have the two Kohenim bringing up the two pieces of wood.
Well, you need one in the morning and two in the
afternoon. There's a cost of it. I mean, what the underlying reason is, I don't know. You probably have, for example, Shamsin the Fall Hirsch or other people like that who talk about Rimozim in the details of Korbanis probably would talk about it. But that's how it is. There's a cost of it. Anyway. So by the same logic, she and the after came scholastic. It's the same thing. If you don't, then you're making it into another kind of carbon in your pathway. So the question is, why is Rabbi Yochanan only mentioning the case of the Oshem Mitzora when we have at least three other examples where the same principle would hold? So the answer is Enoch Nami. The Gemara says, yes, indeed.
Indeed, yes.
Rabbi Yochanan Taka would hold by all four of those things that you have to continue with their regular dinning. Ella Omer Abaya Chodim Inayim Rochet. So Abaya says, okay, all it is Rabbi Yochanan doesn't disagree that it would be true of these four things. Rabbi Yochanan mentioned one of the cases, and we're meant to understand that the same thing would apply to other korbanos that have unique features as well.
He mentions it by the Oshem Mitzora,
because that was the case where he mentioned it in his Beth Medrash. But we're meant to understand that the same thing would apply to the Keves HaBoim Omer and the Tomat Shal Shachar and the Tomat Shemin Abba. Rav Abba says, there's a different here, sir, that no, and most of the Rishonim understand that Rava is actually arguing with Abaya. Yes, some of the Achronim explain that maybe he's not necessarily arguing, he's giving a different reason why Rav Yechanan might have mentioned it only by the Yashim Masoda, but the Rishonim seem to take it as a given that Rava is actually arguing and saying that Rav Yechanan's rule would not apply in the other cases. And in fact, that Amnon only passes them, but he only passes it in the case of Yashim Masoda.
According to Rav Abba,
because Bishlei Mahanach, because Rava says like this, it's one thing when it comes to the Keves that comes with the Omer, or the Tomid Shal Shachar or the Tomid Shal Ben Abay, you know why you wouldn't have to do the extra large Mincha or the Shnei Gzirei Eitzim? Because after all, what are they after all? They're an Oila. Oila Sninu. So therefore, fine, Eloi calls you Lo'ilos Nadova, Kavi Lo'ilos Nadova. So what happens effectively, by being Shechted Shalo L'Shmoi, they are not, they're not Yotze Yechov with them, but fine, they're not an obligatory Ola anymore, but they become an Olos Nadova instead. It's not, it doesn't get redesignated. In other words, redesignating would mean if you had a korban that was shechted as an osham, let's say, and now you would be effectively doing something to change it into an ola or a shlomim or what have you. Here, it was originally an ola, and now it's still becoming an ola. Just before it was a required ola, and now it's a voluntary ola. So therefore, big deal. You don't do the shneg zira etzim, or you don't do the double five mincha, doesn't matter. It's not changing it from one kind of korban to another, such that you should argue that it's false. Therefore, Rabbi Yechanan would say, no. So not like Abaya, who says that, yes, Rabbi Yechanan would say, in the case of the Keves Abayim Ma'omer, you still have to bring the two Esrayim, and in the case of the Tomei Chal Shachar and the Tomei Chal Ben Amayim, you still have to bring the two pieces of wood. No, Rabbi Yechanan would say, by those, you don't have to bring them. Fine, they'll be an Olas Nadava. It's not a big deal. But, says Rava, over here, you're talking about an Oshim Aserda. Eli Muk Mesleib Milse, if you're not going to keep the same rules that it had before when it was supposed to be an Oshem Masurda, there is no other alternative. Oshem Nadava Mi'ika. There's no such thing as a voluntary Oshem. And Oshem is only something that comes when a person did an Aveir, or in this case, a Masurda or another. So therefore, there's nothing else that you could do in order to be master. It's one, again, with the other ones, you're saying it was an Ola and now it's Ola, so it's still Musa to offer. Here, if you were to change it from an Oshem to something else, you wouldn't be able to offer it on a Mizbeach. And that would be passing it. And since it was shechted shalo l'shmoi, where we know that doesn't pass for the korban, it just makes it that it doesn't count for the owner's korban, that means you have to bring it with all the details that it has. Because otherwise, you're turning it into some other kind of osham, where you're turning it into some, well, an oila, not an oila, is being turned from an obligatory one to a voluntary one. But you can't say here, instead of an osham that I was required to bring as a masurda, now I'm bringing an optional osham. There's no such thing as an optional osham. And actually, you even have something that's interesting. There's a Mishnah and a Gemara in Christus that mentions that I think it was Bava ben Butta used to bring an Oshem Tolui every day, except the day after Yom Kippur, because every day he was concerned what if he had been over on some Aveira and he wasn't sure. So there you could argue it's sort of an Adava, but on the other hand, it is coming, the underlying reason is because there may have been some kind of Aveira. Here it wouldn't even be that. Yeah, that's fine. He held, well, that's what an Oshem Tolui is in general. They have a suffix, of course, now the suffix, whether what he ate was chayla or shulman or whatever. That is the case of Oshem Tolui. Okay, I mean, we'll talk about it in Christmas, whatever. The point is that you have that, but there at least, it's not totally nedava because there is some kind of possible chet involved. Here, you'd be trying to make it into a complete nedava, and you can't do that. Here in the case of the Oshem Masurda. So that's why Rabbi Yechanan would make the distinction between the Oshem Masurda and the other three cases.
What do you call it Oshem Masurda? What do you...
What do you mean? It's called an Oshem because the Torah calls it an Oshem.
Yeah, but why the Torah calls it an Oshem?
Because it's brought to the carbon Oshem.
You didn't do what you said to
it. Well, I did. Spoke Oshem Haro, did one of the other things that brought him Sarat, or whatever. This Oshem, you're right. It's strictly speaking, it's somewhat different than the other Oshemos, in that it's not, strictly speaking, coming for Kapara for Chet. It's coming to make him, because right now he's a Mechot to Kippurim. He needs these carbonos to be brought before he can eat Kod Shem or enter the business. Tanya Kava said Rabbi Yechanan. In fact, we learn a brayta like Rabbi Yechanan. Oshem Masurda shot the Shalom Shmoy. If you shechted an Oshem Masurda Shalom Shmoy, or Shalom Nasim Yidamei Agav Bahonos, or another possibility, you did shecht the Shmoy, but you didn't put some of the blood on the ear and thumb and toe of the Masurda. Harezu Oyla Lagavim Mizeach. It still goes up onto the Mizeach. There's a parts of it that are offered, still get offered. The Emorim, Maton Nesachim. Here's Rabbi Yechanan's point. Still requires Nesachim. But sorry, Oshem Achal Atir. But he's still going to need another Oshem together with the Nesachim, of course, in order to make the Mutter to re-enter the business. So that's exactly what Rabbi Yechanan is.
So the other Nesachim will be what?
The regular Nesachim that come with an aisle. The regular Nesachim that come with an aisle to a surname of flour and four logum of oil. Plus the extra logum of oil from which they do the sprinklings and all that. Okay. Fine. Mishnah says, Kol Midishim Mikdash Ho Nigdashes. All of the measuring cups that were used in the Beit Mikdash, and here we're talking about both the ones for liquids and the we learned before. You have the two for two or three, according to the mayor, for liquids, and of course for solids, rather, and the seven for liquids. So all of those, Hoyu Nigdashes, they were all heaped up. Now, in the case of solids, obviously, you can heap them up. In the case of liquids, that's what we were talking about the other day, where you overfill a little bit and it bellies out on the top because of surface tension. But all of them were Nigdashes. chutz mishal kohen. And by the way, that doesn't mean, in other words, for example, that the keli was made to hold an isarin, let's say, and you put into it more than isarin, it keeps up. That's no good. We learned before that a mincha, for example, has to consist of an integral number of isarin, no question. What we mean is the keli itself was made in such a way that once it heats up, the total inside the keli and in the heat equals any isarin. And same thing with the other one. The liquid one, same idea. In other words, that the one, the revia tahin, for example, was made in such a way that once you fill it up and it bellies out on top, the total in there is a revia tahin.
Without the belly, it's not
the without belly, it would be less. Chutz mishal, well, we'll discuss this in the Gemara. Chutz mishal kohen gadol, except for the one that was used to measure the kohen gadol, minchas chavikin, where there the overflow was inside it, meaning, in other words, that it was a little larger. So when it was flattened out, it held any sarin, where the other ones would hold any sarin only when they're heated up. So it was larger, in other words. That's what it means. That the goydish was inside it, in other words, that there was no overflow on the outside because the entire sarin fit within the walls of the container. Now, of course, we had a discussion about this the other day, so the Gemara is going to immediately take that up. We had a mayor against the Chachamim about the two or three dry measuring cups, and we had the discussion over there whether there was goydish or mortal. So that's the first thing we were discussing the Gemara, but wait. Okay. Midas halach birutzehem kodesh. Now, when it comes to the liquid measuring cups, the birutzim are kodesh, and we discussed the other day a couple of possibilities what birutzim are. Is it this belly on top? Is it the part that actually runs down the sides of it? If you filled it up and then some of it runs down the sides. Or, Rabbeinu Gershon has said over there that the birutzim is the foam on top. Whatever it is, the midas halach, birutzehem kodesh, these birutzim have kodesh. Hold on. We're going to get there. Umidas hayavish verusayin chol. Whereas the dry measuring cups, the birusim are chol. Rabbi Akiva says, the reason for the difference is like this. Midas halach kodesh, lefichach verusayin kodesh. The reason is like this. The midas halach were actually clay sharis. They were actually anointed with shemen amishcha. Therefore, the birusim of them become kodesh as well. Midas hayavish chol, whereas the dry measuring cups, according to Rabbi Akiva, were chol. They weren't even nimshach because they didn't have to be. Lefichach verusayin chol. Therefore, any birusim from them are also chol. For a logical reason, there's one logical reason I've seen to explain why taka according to Rabbi Akiva would we say that the dry ones didn't need to be nimshach at all. Actually, there's two ideas. Number one is liquids of necessity have to be in a container. Dry things don't necessarily.
When you say nimshach,
nimshach meaning anointed, the shemen amishcha the original ones made by Moshe Rabbeinu had to be anointed, and that gave them the kedusha of clay shardis. That now whatever's placed into them that's appropriate for them gets kedusha tagur.
And now the subsequent ones.
The subsequent ones became holy through once they were used for their purpose the first time. So, for example, let's say if the original revi'ah tahin that Moshe made, let's say broke or otherwise became unusable, and they had to make a new one, they would use it the first time to measure out a revi'ah tahin, and that would make it kodesh. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so Rabbi Akiva is saying that the midas hayavish are chol. The one logical reason behind that is because midas hayavish are not really as necessary. You can keep dry things, you can keep flour without needing a container for it. Liquids necessarily need a container. That's one point of it. Another point of it actually is also most things that are brought dry, you don't use them immediately for the carbon. For example, what do you bring dry? Flour, typically. And the flour is supposed to be mixed with oil in order to become mincha. Whereas the liquids usually are just used as is, like the wine or the blood or whatever. So that's another reason for Rabbi Akiva to say that the midas halach were nimshach and the midas hayavish were. Rabbi Yossi, I'm a loyal Mishnah.
One is Kurdish and one is not.
That's what he said, yeah. Midas Hayavish Kurdish and Midas Hayavish Kurdish. Rabbi Yossi, I'm a loyal Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi says that's not the reason. Ella, Shalach Neser, Vayavish Enin Neser. Rather, the reason is because when it comes to the liquid ones, whatever was at the bottom gets moved from its place. When you pour in liquid and then you're pouring more, so what you have, each drop of liquid doesn't stay where it was originally. Some of the liquid that was at the bottom gets stirred up and ends up. Some of it may well end up being the part that ends up bellying out or spilling over or foaming up or whatever. No, that's not a problem. But therefore, as JC says, it was already in the container. It already became the scabbish in the container. Therefore, now the fact that it spilled over or whatever doesn't take away the kedusha from it. Vayavish ain't a nectar. Whereas when it comes to dry things, you pour in flour into a container, whatever grain of flour was at the bottom remains at the bottom unless you shake it up.
Right.
So therefore, any grain of flour that actually spills over or bellies out on top or whatever wasn't actually between the walls of the cave, says Rabbi Yossi. That's the point. Therefore, that's a logical reason to say that the birustim of
the liquid,
that's the point. When you pour a liquid into a container, you have a particular drop started at the bottom, but then as you pour more in, that particular drop gets stirred up and moved, and eventually it may end up winding all the way at the top. That's the point. That's the Yossi's point. That's why it still needs to retain its kedusha. By the way, I mean, in the Mishnah printed in front of us uses the word ne'ekar, like it's uprooted from its place. Hagoy Tabak brings another gift, a ne'ekar with a cup, you know, with a letter cup, meaning stirred up. It amounts to the same thing. The point is that either way, it all gets mixed up, as opposed to with flour and other solid, whatever was put in a certain place stays in that place.
We're going to see him in the Gemara.
Okay. But first of all, man, because my ass, this first statement in the Mishnah that we said all the measuring cups in the Bis Mikdash were made to be heaped up, except for the one for the Kohen Gadol that was meant to be flattened out. Mani, which of the two Tanoim that we learned about at the beginning of the text does that follow? Either Meir, if according to the Meir, where the Meir had said that there were two kinds of Isarin, one that was meant to be heaped and one that was meant to be flat, Shad Gadol Shava, then what do you mean? There was one that was meant to be heaped up. So there was one out of two, rather, that was meant to be heaped up, right? So you can't say all of them. Irabanan, Chodor, or Mochok. And according to the Rabbanan, there were two Esroinim. There was only one type of Esroin, and it was Mochok. He said over there, that's based on what Rabbeir says, we can understand what the Chamin would say. They would smooth it out. But the point is, when it was smoothed out, it held an Esroin.
Right.
So therefore, what do you mean that our Mishnah says that all of them were heaped up? According to the Meir, there's no all because there's only one that was heaped up, and according to the Chum, there were none.
So it's a third opinion?
The answer is, Amar Chista La'ol Amar Meir. No, actually, our Mishnah does go like a Meir. Well, my Kol Midos, what does he mean when he says Kol Midos, all the measurements, all the measures, he doesn't mean all the measuring cups. He means Kol Medidos. He means all the measurements that were done. In other words, whenever they measured, using that one Isarim, using that, Rameir again is saying that there were two Esroinus, one that was reserved for the Kohen Gadol Chavitin and was made larger so that would hold an Isarin when it smoothed out. The other one was smaller and it was made to hold an Isarin heaped up. That one was used for most of the measurements of an Isarin, of this Mikdash. Anytime a person brought a Mincha or anytime you had the Mincha for the Sochin, or whatever, you're measuring it out without Isarin. So Kol Medidos, all the measurements were done heaped up, with the exception of the measurement that was done for the Chavitin Kohen Gadol. But there was only one measuring cup that was made to be heaped up, but that measuring cup was used many, many times.
That's the point.
You had one that was made in such a way that once you heap it up, it will hold exactly in the
Sarin. Yeah, how much do you have to heap it up?
So the Gemara elsewhere talks about, I mentioned at the beginning of the parish, the Gemara elsewhere talks about that as long as you have a kavi that's sized according to a certain proportion, it can hold in the heap 50% of what it would hold inside between its walls. The Gemara learns it from the Yamshel Shloimeh. You have the big copper, you have a big gigantic copper tank that Shloimeh HaMelech made for the first place, especially the Kohen would use it, the Tovel and whatever, and the Pasuk described, in one place in Malachim, the Pasuk described that the thing held 2,000 bahts. You learned previously that a bahth is a liquid measure, 1/10 of an acre. In Zivrei Yamin, when it describes it again, it says that it would hold 3,000 bahts. So what is it, 2,000 or 3,000? So the Gemara in Eruvin explains that what it is if you put liquids in there, it would hold 2,000 bahts, because there's a limit how much it can belly up over. But if you put in solids, we can have a large heap, then it would be able to hold 3,000 bahts.
So 2 out of 3 is not 50%?
No. In other words, the heap is 50% of what's inside the container. Inside, between the walls of the container, you have 2,000 bahts. And in the heap above the rim of the container, you have another 1,000 bahts. It depends. Again, it depends how the keli is sized. If it's tall and narrow, obviously you're not going to. You have to be talking about it.
It
has to be wide, but on the other hand, it's too wide relative to its height, then also not, because then you lose volume as well. You actually have in a completely different context, having to do with the halachas of being a vassal in Sodom and 60. The Merkavah Mishnah makes a whole elaborate calculation along the lines of that if you have a keli whose height is exactly half its length or its width, and whether it's square or round, you have the diameter of it. Let's say, for example, you have one that's 10 inches across and the height of it is 5 inches tall, then it will be best proportion to be mevakel b'shishin, anything that's embedded within its walls, and that also will be the ideal shape as far as the heat being the maximum size. The Yam Shul Shlomo was like that, actually. The Yam Shul Shlomo was 10 amos wide, 10 amos in diameter, and 5 amos tall.
The surface is twice the amount of
not the surface. The height is no. The height. Well, the height is half of the diameter. Yeah.
The
height of the keli is half of the width of the keli.
Right.
Okay. Right. Anyway. Fine. So the point is, and again, according to the mayor, we're saying that our Mishnah goes like a mayor. What it means is like this. Yeah. Again, you have two esturinus in the Beis Mikdash. One was reserved for the Kohen Gadol Chavitin, and that one was made to hold an exact Isarin when it smoothed out. The other one was used for all the other Menachos. Anytime they need to measure an Isarin, they use that one. They made it in such a way, in such a shape, in such a size, that when it heats up, it will hold an Isarin.
And that was 50.
So for Pashtos, it means that they made it that the inside of it will hold 2/3, and the heat will hold 1/3. Yeah. Anyway, so that's what it means.
So the only one.
Was the one for the Kohen Gadol. That's again a coincidence of made. Coincidence of Chachamim, no. Yeah. Coincidence of Chachamim, there was only one. It was made to be flat. Okay. That was used for all of them, for anything that they measured any sorin for.
Yeah.
Both the Kohen Gadol and everybody else. Was right. Okay. So anyway, so that's what the Mishnah means. Called Midos, it means called Medidos, all the measurements that were done using that one Isarin. Then we said midas halach, they were saying kodesh. Then our Mishnah continued. When it comes to the liquid measurements, the birusim have kedusha, but not with the dry measurements. Right? And we had.
I assume they weren't right down.
No. So wait, we had Rabbi Akiva saying the reason is because one was made kodesh and the other was not. And Rabbi Yossi says the reason is because liquids get mixed around and solids don't. So, the my commissity. So what is the actual machlokas? We actually have a three-way machlokas in our Mishnah. Because we started by saying we have a Tanakhama of our Mishnah said that all the midos were nigdoshes, which implies that even the dry measuring cups, the heat was kodesh. And then you have Rabbi Akiva saying that not the dry ones, only the liquid ones. And Rabbi Yossi saying also only the dry ones, not the liquid ones, but for a different reason. So, only the liquid ones, not the dry. So what's the machlokes? So like, Tanakhama, Sava, Midas, Alat, Nimshecha, Vein, Mimifnim, Vein, Machut. The Tanakhama holds like this. The measuring cups for liquids, the half a hin and quarter of a hin and so forth, were nimshach both on the inside and the outside.
Okay.
So we discussed before the question, Achronim discussed the question, does it mean that physically that Shemen HaMishcha was actually applied to the inside as well as to the outside, or does this mean when they applied the Shemen HaMishcha, they had in mind that it's going to be Mekadesh the inside and the outside, or that they had in mind it's going to be Mekadesh only the inside? There's also, by the way, a different explanation that a number of the Rishonim say, I think Rashi said it earlier, that Bachus over here according to Rashi's caveat, that we're not talking about what spills over, just what bellies out on top, then we're not talking about the actual outside of the keli. What we mean is the upper rim of the keli.
The rim.
No, that's what I mean, the rim, the top surface of the rim.
Well,
yeah. Okay, so the Tanakhama holds, that's the thing, so the Tanakhama holds up a midas halach or nimshach, such that the kedusha is both on the inside and on the rim,
up to
and including the rim. Yes. Well, again, according to Miyocha Sarashi, it would include the actual outside as well, because he learns that Beirutin is the part that spills over. But yeah, okay. That's according to the Tanakh. Yeah. Midas Yavish Nimshach Mifnim V'lo Nimshach V'chutz. Whereas he would say the Midas Yavish was only Nimshach for the inside, not for the outside. Therefore, the rim is not Kodesh, and certainly the outside is not. Therefore, anything heaped up above the rim doesn't have Kodesh, he would say. He would say that it was Nimshach Mifnim, but not V'chutz. So therefore, okay, so anything that's on the rim is not going to have Kodesh, but anything that's heaped up above the actual cavity of the keli will have Kodesh.
When it's up to the rim,
whatever's on the rim, whatever's going over the rim, is not going to have kedusha. But
over the rim,
yeah. So therefore, yeah. So
outside the rim is not the
outside the rim, right? So won't give it kedusha. So therefore, yeah. Okay, so that's the kind of Tana. Rabbi Akiva saw the midas halach nimshachom bein mufnim bein machlus. Rabbi Akiva would say that the midas halach was nimshach only on the out, was also nimshach. He agrees with Tanakama that it was nimshach on the inside, on the outside. Therefore, he would hold the birusim of the midas halach hakodesh. But he would say midas yavish, or nimshach hakaliku. He would say the midas yavish was not nimshach at all. According to him, the whole thing is chol. So fine, it has kedusha tapeh, it has kedusha, it has
whatever is the container is made.
So fine, so Rashi Tzaviyad says fine, whatever he puts into the container, he gives it kedusha verbally. So therefore, but he only has in mind, he's in the Kaddish, whatever's inside the container, not whatever's not necessary. The birusim are not necessary because they're heaped up or they're spilling out. Therefore, he doesn't have in mind to be in the Kaddish. That's Rabbi Akiva. So according to the Tanakhama, you have the lach with nimshach inside and out, the yavish only on the inside. Rabbi Akiva says there's no such thing inside and outside. The lach was on the inside and outside. The yavish was neither inside nor outside. The only kedusha that anything gets from being in the midas yavish is kedushas peh, just that the person is verbally makadosh. And Rabbi Yossi saw the idi nimshacham and snimbal and nimshacham lachos. Rabbi Yossi says both of them were nimshach only on the outside, and only on the inside, not the outside.
The dry and the wet.
The dry and the wet. Right, the hocha heinus heima. So then, what's the reason? Why the difference? The lach necker, because in the case of liquids, the liquid move the molecules of the liquid move around. Therefore, when we gather the monocarpy, so what's now on the rim or even spilling over the rim or whatever came from inside the candy. So it already had kedusha. By yavash ain't a necker, whereas the dry doesn't get moved around. So whatever is spilling out was never inside the candy anyway.
What do you mean inside and outside exactly?
Imagine you take a cup. Okay. Again, we're talking about, I mentioned that outside, you have a machlokas, whether it means literally the outside or whether it just means the rim. But whatever, for our purpose, it's not a great deal of difference. The point is, when you have, if you take a cup and fill it up with liquid, a particular molecule of liquid that spills over the edge at one point may have been inside the cup, between the walls of the cup, and then it got moved, and then, it got displaced by the
mouth. Outside the cavity.
Yeah, well, it can mean also bellying up over the cavity, but whatever.
That's
also called Birdish, yeah. I mean, that's what we said in our Mishnah. Yeah,
it's
fine, but that's one explanation of Birustim. There were three explanations of Birustim, you said. The part that bellies out on top, which is Rashi Saviad, the part that spills over the side, which is Miyoko Sirashi, and the foam, which is Rebbe Negeshin. Okay. So anyway, but on the other hand, if you were to take a cup and fill it up with flour, any particular grain of flour that spills out or heats up above the top of it was never inside the container in the first place. Yeah. So that's the difference, Rabbi Yossi said. Okay, so the question is, chinech or my hobby? So what? According to Rabbi Yossi's logic, what's the difference about the flute? No, we're talking wine and oil. They're not particularly heavy. You still have, there's going to be, fine, but you still have one molecule that is going to displace another one. Good. The question is, the chinech or my hobby? So what if it was at one point inside the keli and now it got displaced and spilling out? Yadra l'mayda sarach kamachavin. L'chura, when you're pouring into the keli in the first place, you're only having in mind in the Kaddish the amount that you need. You're not intending in the Kaddish any overflow. So why should that extra, once whatever part overflows, was never meant to have kedusha in the first place?
Not everybody agrees.
Well, Amar Rav Dimi, Bar Shishna, Mishmei Rav, Zoi Sei Meres. Well, based on this, since we see that that's not the case, then according to Rav Yossi, anyway, that means clay shardis, Mekadosh, and Shalemi Das. That means the clay shardis can be Mekadosh what's placed into them, even if he didn't have Das to be Mekadosh what was put into them. We've discussed that previously, whether it has to be that, whether it's only Mekadosh what you intended to go in there, or whether it's Mekadosh even things that you didn't intend, to go in there. What do you mean?
What the rest is meaning? If it went into the keli and you intended not to be kodesh.
Oh, no, I don't know. Maybe. Could be. But we had a sugya about it earlier in connection with the lach. I told you about whether the Mekadosh Shalemi Das. Anyway, so based on this, we see the Mekadosh Shalemi Das. Therefore, it doesn't matter that he had in mind to only be Mekadosh, to only be Mekadosh exactly what he needed, exactly a log, for example. Whatever he poured in extra also becomes kodesh. Yeah. Okay. Ravina Omer, Ravina says you don't have to explain it that way. La'olam emalach clay shardis en makadish en elamidas. No, you could say that clay shardis are only makadish what you intended to put in them. So the reason why we're going to say that what went in there and then afterwards was displaced and bellied out, was spilled over, the reason why you're going to say that it still has kedusha, it's not midaranaita. Ugzera. It's a gzera derabanan. Shema Yomru might be in the Kli Shadis Bechol, because people might think that you can take something that once was in a Kli Shadis and make it Chol, and they're not going to realize that that's not the case. Once placed in a Kli Shadis and got Kedushas Egul from the Kli Shadis, you can't be Chol anymore. So therefore, the people are not going to realize the distinction between what the people are not going to realize the distinction between the Yisarim that you, not the Yisarim, the Lug that you meant to be Mekadesh versus the extra drops that you didn't. So therefore, we make it clear that the fellows also have Kedushas.
Just because
of that. Right. Yeah. Okay. Most of Rav Zera. Okay, Rav Zera says in that case I have a contradiction to that. We learn in a Mishnah in the next parak, where in the next parak we're going to talk about this concept about that you're saying we make such a Zera. So how about we have in the next parak we're going to talk about the dinim of Alechem Afanim, among other things. We're also in the course of that, we're going to talk about also we're going to talk about when the Lachem Afanim was set up and when it was taken off. The rule was it was played every Shabbos. Fresh Lachem Afanim was placed on the Shulchan together with the Shnei Bozichah Levayna. Sometimes on Shabbos, and we say in Shabbos davening. We say in Shabbos davening, and we're stopping the Bozichah, and sometimes after the Korban Musaf, apparently, yeah. Anyway, the point is that at some point on Shabbos, they would replace the Lachem Afanim. They'd take the old, they'd burn the Levayna and distribute the Lachem Afanim among the Kohanim, but it had to be placed there on Shabbos. So a Mishnah says in the next paragraph, if they set up the Lachem Afanim and the Bozichin after Shabbos, on Sunday or some other time during the week, the Hikdir of the Bozichin to Shabbos, and then they offered the Bozichin on the following Shabbos, Sula, then it would be possible, because that's no good. It hasn't been there long enough. It's supposed to be there for full 7 days. Like this, it was only there 6 days. First of all, case of Yasa, so what should you do? Leave it for the following Shabbos. In other words, let's say, for example, you put it on there, let's say Sunday of Parashat Shmos. So what we're saying is, instead of, like this, you would think to take it off on Shabbos Parashat Shmos, as you usually do, and that's no good, because Mechot is mine, leave it there until Shabbos Parashat Ve'era. No problem, it'll be there 15 days instead of 7.
Take it out in between.
Right. And the point is, it has to be taken out on Shabbos, but it has to remain there from one Shabbos to the next.
So then what do? You bring more challahs?
No, that's the point. You leave those same 12 challahs that you put there on Sunday of Parshas Shmos, you leave them there until Shabbos Parshas Va'era, 15 days later, together with the Bozichin, no problem.
But then we said that you have to change it every Shabbos.
But in this case, you don't, because it was placed on after Shabbos. Shafilu huwal shulchan yomim rabim ein v'kachlum. Even if it remains there beyond 7 days, there's no problem. They don't become possible with lina as long as they're on these shulchan. By the way, you have this that we're saying, Sula over here, Rashi actually points out in Yuma that not necessarily is possible in the sense that now these Lachem Afanim are disqualified, that you have to burn them or whatever. Rashi actually says there you shouldn't be gerdes Sula. It just means that what you need to do is that you need to leave them on there for the following Shabbos. On the other hand, over here Rashi keeps the gears of Psula in the sense that Mechutzah Zman, that you didn't leave it on the Shulchan long enough. And therefore, the Torah says also when we say Kei Tzedakah, it means either what should you do in advance to prevent it from becoming possible if it was originally set up on Sunday, let's say, or possibility number two, if you offered the Bezichin on Shabbos at B'dieved, where you weren't supposed to because it was too early, what are you supposed to do with the Lachem Afanim now? So we're saying leave it on the Shulchan for another week.
No problem.
And that's no problem because it doesn't become possible. Now, the question is like this. Vamai, now why should we say it doesn't become possible if you leave it on there extra time? Shouldn't we make a Zera similarity that people might think that you can leave things overnight or indefinitely in a Kli Shadis? Usually anything else that's in a Kli Shadis becomes possible with Lina. Like this, if you're allowing them to leave it beyond the regular Shabbos, and people are going to think the same thing. No, well, the Zichin and the Lachem Afanim, whatever. The point is that people are going to think the same way. Fine, you put a Mincha in a Kli Shadis, no problem, we can leave it till tomorrow. You put in anything else in a Kli Shadis, no problem, we can leave it till tomorrow. Why don't we make it for Zera? And Rabbi Gershom has a different explanation of this expression, Maskidin the Kli Shadis, that people are going to think, okay, you know what, you can use the Kli Shadis for storage, just for storing ordinary things.
But how can you make it Zera when the Lachem Afanim has to stay from Shabbos to Shabbos?
That's the point. Maybe we should say in this case, fine, those Lachem Afanim are disqualified. Now, on Shabbos, we'll have to set up new Lachem Afanim and make sure they stay there until the following Shabbos. Why should we say that the old Lachem Afanim that we put there on Sunday should be allowed to remain there another Shabbos? The answer is, the Gemara says, Pnima Chutz Karomit. You're thinking to bring a contradiction between something that happens inside the Heichel versus something that happens outside of it. Pim Lach Kolam Yadi. something happens inside the heichal. Not everybody knows what's going on over there, because only certain kain, only the kain, you're going there, and only a certain time. Yeah. So chus kolam yadi, whereas if you have something in the Azorah, everybody knows what's going on, so there's a problem that people might think that you can take something that was in a klisharis and use it for chol.
Well, they could see through the window.
Yeah, fine, but usually they're not going to. Usually they're not going to realize that this particular lacham upon was on there extra day. So therefore, we're not going to...
Israel, if it was standing...
You could. I mean, you could see that they have Israel see through the walls or through the windows of the heichal. Okay, but it's not usual, you know. Okay. So now that we've talked about the dirusim in our Mishnah and in our Gemara, now we're going to talk about something else involving those dirusim. Shnan Basim. We learned in a Mishnah in Shkolim, Moistam Nisachim L'Kayis HaMizbeach. The leftovers of Nisachim are used for Kayis HaMizbeach. For Kayis HaMizbeach, we know, is when they're during slack seasons, when there's no korbanos being brought, they would bring from the money of the Sibur, they'd bring from the Trumas HaLishka, they would buy from public funds, they would buy animals for korbanos and offer them as olas. That's called Kayis HaMizbeach, which literally means the dessert. That's called Kayis HaMizbeach. Kayis literally means dessert. It literally means what's left over. It means it's like dessert, like after the main meal, like now when nothing else is being eaten, and the mizbeach is having a korban for dessert, so to speak. So the point is, okay, so my mos and the sakim. So what are these mos and the sakim? Rav Chiya bar Yosef on the birus imidus. Rav Chiya bar Yosef says these are the birus imidus that we've been talking about. So the overflows of the chalim. So therefore, they'd sell them and then use them to buy kai from the sand. Rabbi Yechanan says that's not what it means. It means something different. And actually, the Mefarshim say they're not necessarily arguing. In fact, the Rambam passes that both of these are true. Both of these are considered most in the Sakhim. So Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef may be mentioning one case, and Rabbi Yechanan is mentioning the other. Anyway, so Rabbi Yechanan says
argument.
Yeah, not necessarily is there an argument. Moister Nesachim means like as follows. We learn in another Mishnah in Shkolim like this. Hamakabel Olav Mosafik Slothus Me'aba. If somebody accepts on himself, if somebody makes a deal with the Beit Mikdash, now you had like this, the Beit Mikdash needs at all times, they need huge quantities, they need animals, they need flour, they need wine, etc. They don't manufacture these things on site. They would contract with vendors, they'd contract with vendors to sell them. And the Mishnah says over there that what they would do is they would make a deal in advance for the whole year or for the whole season or whatever that they're gonna lock in a price. They're gonna lock in a price and the guy has to supply it at that price. So I'm a cabal all of the sophist slosses may have, if the vendor agrees that he's going to supply soilus, flour from Manasseh, at the rate of 4 saw per sella. But under the shalosh, and then prices went up, and now a seller will only buy three saw. So the problem is, well, you stop it, Me'ava. He's still required to supply four saw per seller at the original price because Hekdesh locked it in. In fact, Rashi explains, based on Gemara's and other places, that what happened is usually no. The thing is, with a hediyot, this wouldn't necessarily work because with a hediyot, even if he gave money, there's no kinyan until he did meshicha, and they didn't do meshicha yet. By Hekdesh, though, but not an accessible for come life, once money is paid, the Kenyan takes place. Therefore, right. So therefore, so since Hekdesh already prepaid him, therefore, then the guy has to hold up his end of the bargain, even though now he's taking a loss on it, because now the service is more expensive. And the other way around, Mishalosh v'omdu ma'aga, what about the other way around? If Hekdesh locked in at a price of 3 star per seller, and later on, prices went down, and now you can buy 4 stuff for the seller. Nesapik me'adah. No, he now has to start supplying 4 stuff for the seller. Because if the prices went down, so now Hekdesh is able to get more for his money, then he has to supply that more. He can't say, well, you locked in the higher price, therefore I'm entitled to go to that. Why, Rashi says? Because even in the case of a hediyot would be able to change his mind in such a case. He would get me shakar of it.
More simply, you have to buy clothes on
the That's what we're saying, though. Right. No, because in other words, for example, because it depends. If they made a deal, right, in this case, with 3 and 4. No, in this case, 3 and 4, respectively. I mean, we can't say the blanket statement 4.
Yeah.
It could be 5 and 6. It could be whatever the numbers are. The point is, he always has to supply the higher number. Right.
But not more than 4.
Well, unless prices went up and now it's 5 for so for seller, yeah.
Well, instead of talking about the price, why don't we just talk about the amount that he has to give?
Because the amount he has to give, because that's the thing. If they made a deal on four, then he has to stick to four. But on the other hand, if they made a deal for three, sometimes he's still going to have to supply four. Prices went down. Okay, but the mission is phrasing it this way. In other words, that either way, he has to supply either what it was, or either what it would have bought originally or what it buys now, whichever is more.
When he's supposed to bring more, he has to bring more.
And when he's
supposed to bring less, he's not supposed to bring less.
That's what that means.
So basically...
But basically, in other words, he's always bringing more. Right, okay.
Regardless of the price.
No. Okay, whatever. Because it also depends. No. Because again, if there was, for example, let's say, for example, and if price was originally was three stars to the seller, and now it went really down, and now it's five to the seller, then he has to supply five, not four. So it's not a blanket statement that he has to supply four. If he has to supply the according to the price that he contracted for, and no, he can't do any less than that, but he could end up doing more than that if prices go down. That's what it is.
How much more?
Whatever current prices are, new, because even a Hedget would be able to change his mind at that point, as long as there was no Mashiach. Fine, let's go on. Anyway, the point is, Shiyad Hektish Al Yoina. Either way, Hektish always has the upper hand. So therefore, Rabbi Yechon is saying, those are the most in the suffering. So now consider, for example, this last case, where the Hektish paid him 10 Sloim to buy 30 saw of solar, and now prices went down, and they're able to get 40 saw of solar for that price, so they have 10 extra, they have to provide it. But therefore, Hektish now has 10 extra saw of solar. What are they supposed to do with it? They don't need it for the monopolies. That's most of the solar. And that's what they use for Kayas and Azek.
Think about it, if prices go down,
then they have most of the solar. They still have to provide it, and then they have extra. Right.
Does he get anything in exchange for that?
No, because even with a Hedyot, he would still have to do it. The Hedyot would get me Shapara if he changed his mind, but he still could, yeah. Tanya Kavaseh did a Priya by Yosef, Tanya Kavaseh did a Biyachan. And we actually have glasses like both opinions of what most of the Sakhamar. Tanya Kavaseh did a Priya by Yosef. What do they do with these that we mentioned in our Mishnah? So like this, in Yesh Zevachacher, if there is another carbon, Yikruvu Imay, then they should offer them as Nesachim together with that other carbon. The Imlonu, if they were left overnight, Ipostal the Lina, then they become postal by Lina because they were in a Fishar, right? The in love, and if not, Makaitz and Behenes and Mizeah, and if not, then they use them, they sell them and use them for Kaitz and Mizeah. So what do you mean in Lonu and in love? So Rashi explains like this. In Lonu would mean, let's say, there was no other carbon available to offer with them, and then therefore they ended up getting left overnight, so now they become like any other Sulayam Akshashin and actually burnt. On the other hand, imlav means if there's no other carbon that day, but the day hasn't passed yet, so these things are still kosher to be used, therefore they can sell them and use them for kayak in the day. Okay, that's Rashi's explanation, although the Mishnah Lamelech has a problem with it, that in that case, the order of the cases is out of order. It should have first said imlav and then imlav. So therefore, there's a different explanation that Amnon understands it kind of the other way around, that it means if there's another carbon, then they're offered with it. And if there was another carbon, but they weren't offered with it after all, then they become possible by Lina. In Lav would mean if there was no other carbon to begin with, to offer them with, then they don't become possible by Lina, because they're not associated with any carbon yet, then therefore they can sell them for Kayas on the day.
And if there are,
if there was a carbon that they were meant to be brought with, and then they didn't end up bringing it with that carbon, they ended up leaving it overnight, then they become possible by Lina. The Kayas Zemahu, what is Kayas on the day consist of? Olois, it says, Korbanos Ola, Habosol Hashem, Ba'odos HaKoinim, the meat goes to Hashem because it's burned on the Mizeah, and the skins go to the Koinim. The Mishnah in Shkola mentions that this is a Durasha that Yoyodr Koin Gadol made during the time of the first Mishnah, that the Koinim get, well, the Koinim always get to keep the skins of an Ola, yeah. But the point is, in this case, when we have extra money, like this Kayas on the Mizeah, that's what we do with it. It has to be something that'll, so to speak, that'll benefit Hashem and the Koinim, meaning that it's brought for an Ola where Hashem gets a part of it on the Mizeach and the Kohenim get a part of it, the skin. Okay. So that Braisa supports what Rabbi Bar Yosef said, that the definition of, that the Birusim Midas are used for Kayas and Mizeach, and therefore that would be the most in the Sachem. Tanya Kava said Rabbi Yechanan, we learn a Braisa also like Rabbi Yechanan, and the Kabbal all of us talk, it's Flopus Me'aga. So that's one Braisa. We have another Braisa that says like Rabbi Yechanan. That, because again, they're not necessarily arguing. If a vendor agreed that he's going to supply flour at the rate of four saw per seller for under Mishalish, and prices went up, and now it costs three, and now a seller will only buy three saw flour, Mesafik Me'abe, he still has to supply four, and he's the law. Misholosh v'omdubaba, and it's the other way around. If he contracted at 3 saw to the seller and prices went down, and now he's at 4 saw to the seller, misapik me'aba. Now he has to start supplying at 4. Shiyad hektish alo yerna, because hektish always has the upper hand. V'zeu sheshaninu moist in the sachim. V'kayis on the zeach. This is what we mean when we say in the Mishnah and Shkolim that moist in the sachim are used for kayis on the zeach. So you have Rabbi Yosef is right, and Rabbi Yechanan is also right. Those are two types of moist in the sachim, and both of them are used towards kayis on the zeach. Not he can't make a deal, but it means even though a price has been locked in, he may that price is not necessarily fixed, depending on what happens. But actually, Tosfos has a long discussion over here how this works with the halachos of ribis anyway. But that's a whole other issue. No, it's not necessarily. Well, I think that's one thing that Tosfos brings up is that maybe with hektish there's not really such an issue with ribis. But the whole concept of buying at different prices that it should be also is only with rabbanon, so maybe it doesn't apply to hektish, right?
Ribis is when you borrow.
True ribis, ribis sutta is when you borrow 100 and say I'm going to pay back 110.
Right.
There's no hetedim for that for hektish.
This is not the case.
This is only a case of changing prices where it's only off the drama.
Kai
some example is the korbanos that are brought when there's no other korbanos being brought.
But on principle, let's say the hektish would borrow, and would there be a ribis if they received as a compensation more than they borrow?
The pastor, yeah. I mean, that's what Tosfos is talking about again. Tosfos gets into a long discussion about it. I didn't look over it in detail. And one thing Tosfos says is maybe we're not talking about hektish directly dealing with the vendors. Maybe what it is you're talking about, for example, people who donate money to these vendors in order that they should supply X amount to the Beit Mikdash. That's a little different. Yeah.
Strictly about
hektish. I don't know. Not sure. All right. Onward. Mishnah says, "Kol korbanos ha-tzibur v'ayochad to'unim nesachim, all korbanos that are brought by the tzibur or by the individual require nesachim, chutz min ha-bechor v'ha-meiser v'ha-pesach v'ha-chatas v'ha-oshem, with the exception of those five korbanos. Ella, and then there's an exception within that exception, shechatoseh shal-mesherda v'ha-shomoy to'unim nesachim. The chatas and the osham brought by a mesarda, those come with nesachim. We learned 2 mishnayos ago about the nesachim of a, but only those. So okay, so any oila, any shlomim, any toda, whatever comes with nesachim. There's the 5 that we mentioned in our mishnah don't, except for the chatas and the osham of the mesarda. So now let's learn in the gemara how we know that concept. Turn it up on them. We learn in a braita. Now you have the concept of nesachim by the korbanos of a yochid. It talks about in Parashat Shlach. In fact, the Tzoner actually has an interesting idea on it. He says before the Chet HaEzel, you could bring a korban without the Sachim. We find that there's a korbanos that were brought by the Ovos and by Noach and whenever weren't brought with the Sachim. After the Chet HaEzel, a new rule was instituted. The Tzibur has to bring the Sachim with their korbanos. And then after the Chet HaEzel, a further rule was instituted to compensate for the fact they'd done such a terrible Avedah, so now they needed something extra. And then after the Chet HaMedaglin, then a further thing was added to the Yachid also. That's the Torah as far as anyway. Fine. So the Pesach says like this.
So the Kohanim shouldn't be...
No, because once everybody is obligated in the Kohanim. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So the Pesach says...
Shemen and wine, right?
Flour, oil, and wine. Okay, so the Pesach says, V'asistem isha l'Hashem. The Pesach describes, if you bring a korban to Hashem, it starts off, the yachol kol oil l'ishim, you would think anything that's burnt in the fire on the mezeach, tone the sachem should require the sachem, meaning therefore you would think that even mincha, even let's say a person is bringing an independent mincha, maybe he also needs to bring wine with it. No, time of lema oila. No, therefore the pasuk says the whole pasuk goes v'asitim isha l'Hashem oila oiza v'achafal neder ibn davar ibn adechem v'achas riach nechayef l'Hashem and abakar ibn atzim. So we're going to be dashing it phrase by phrase. But since it says oila, then that means it's not, for example, a mincha. Okay, shlomim minayin. How do we know it also applies to a shlomim? Time of lema zevach. So the pasuk says, "Oila oy zavach," and zavach means a korban, means a shlom. Okay, toda minayin. How do we know the same thing applies to a toda? Talmud lema oy zavach. Since it says oy zavach, so the extra word oy teaches us also a toda. So far we have oila, shlomim, and toda.
That
they need in the second. Okay, next, yachol shani mar ba'ach b'choda ma'aser pesach b'chatos b'asham. So then you would think that's next. Well, zavach is a shlomim, and oy zavach is a toda. Then you would think in that case that you should include also the 5 mentioned in our Mishnah. No, Talmud Lomar. Therefore, the pasuk continues, "Lafale neder oibin adav." When the person declares a neder or an adav, Therefore, the rule is bav a neder and a dava tor nesachim. Only a korban that can be brought by a neder or a dava, such as an olo or a shlomim or a toga, requires nesachim. She'ein a bav a neder and a dava. The five korbanos, b'chor, ma'aseh, pesach, chatas, and osham, don't come in a dava. They're all obligatory korbanos. You have a b'chor, you have to offer it. You have every they're required.
It's a miut.
Since it says the following neder and a dava, it's only it. She'ein a bav, any korban that's not voluntary doesn't need nesachim. Okay, so then in that case, mashma lahosi etelu. Fine, okay, in that case, then the pasuk clearly means to exclude the five korbanos. In that case, osias chovas habois machmas a regel beregel. In that case, then we should say it also should exclude the korbanos that you're required to bring during a yomtiv as a result of a yomtiv. Umay new olus to iya mashamech chaviga. Namely, because you would think in that case, when a person comes to be Ola Leregel, I'm a Shalosh Regolim, they're obligated to bring an Ola and they're obligated to bring a Shlom. They're obligated to bring an Ola as Olas Re'iyah for the fact that they're appearing before Hashem, and they're obligated to bring a Shlomim for Simcha Yom.
Therefore,
they're obligatory. If we just said that Korbanos that are you're obligated, you don't need the Sachin, then you should say that those you don't need the Sachin either. No, Tamad Lema, Oyga Mayadechen. No, therefore the Pasuk continues, or what you bring on your Yom Tovim. Therefore, kol abav mayadech, and anything that comes on your yom tovim, tov nesachim, requires nesachim. So therefore, that the olas ru'iyah and the shamech chagiga are back in. So not the korban pesach, because the korban pesach is brought on erev pesach, it's not brought on yom
tovim.
But still brought before pesach, it's not brought on the moed itself. B'mayadech means that it's brought on the moed. No, well, in a way it is, you know, your malacha because you bring the carbon, but it's not a moyed as in where it's not one of the shalosh regalim. It's not a real moyed. So therefore, the Pesach is out, but the olas ru'iyah and the shamech chagigari. Continues the braita. Okay, well, in that case, then once we're saying that we're including the korbanos that you have to bring out of yachid, have to bring on yom tov, well then, obviously irin chatos, and in that case, we should also bring in and say that it includes also the goats that are brought as chatos for the sivur on every yom tov. Every yom tov, you have a minchasim and a chain from the river, and you have the soil lachaker, so that should also require, in the second, hoil a bone chover b'rego, because after all, those are also, they come in as an obligation on the yom tov, and we said, oh, you may have this. No, Talmud Loma. No, therefore the pasuk says a few psukim later, v'chi sasa ben bakar, v'chi sasa ben bakar. The pasuk continues a few psukim later, and if you bring an animal from the cattle, a cow or a bull, as a curse. Now the point is, ben bakar b'chlal loya. Now up until now we were talking about korbanos in general, any animal that could be brought for a korban. Now, so the ben bakar was part of that general category. Now, the lama yasa, why is it being singled out? It means to make a hekesh there. Ma ben bakar miyuchad bav a neder and a dava. Just like a ben bakar has the characteristic that it's a korban that is able to be brought to neder and a dava. Because, in other words, it can be brought to neder and a dava. Akol bav a neder and a dava. So we're back to that it has to be a korban that can be brought to neder and a dava. So therefore, yes, the korbanos of the yom tovim, but not the ones that are chatoid. In other words, we're including the oila and the shama chagiga, because after all, you have other oilas and other shlomim that can be brought voluntarily. But there's no such thing as a voluntary chasa. Therefore, on that basis, on the basis of a chisasa ben bakar, we're excluding the chatoid of the regal.
Because
not only they're not voluntary, but it's not even a category of carbon that's voluntary. As opposed to the oilas ru'iyah and shama chagiga, basically, they're an ola and a shlomim. They're just an ola and a shlomim being brought for a specific occasion. But nevertheless, they're still basically an ola and basically a shlomim. And other olas and other shlomim can be brought for neder and a dava. Okay. Fine. Then continues the braita. So the pasuk continues, lasis reyach nichayach la'ashem min habakar min hasayin, ma'atam adlaima. What are we learning from the last phrase of the pasuk to do something that's a pleasing odor for Hashem, not as usual, from the bakar or from the sign? What are we learning from that part? So like this, because since earlier in the pasuk it said the word ola, then you would think it applies even to an ola sa'if. You bring an ola sa'if, you have to bring the sa'if. Any ola. So therefore, the pasuk finishes off from the bakar or from the sign, meaning that it's limited only to animals. Vodka is heavy animal, stone is lighter animal, right? But the point is, only those require the Nesachim, not groups. Okay. Divrei Rav Yoshia, that's how Rav Yoshia learns it. Rav Yonasan on the Enoch Sarek, Rav Yonasan says, I don't even need that. I don't need the words in a bokeh and in a stone to teach us that birds are not included. Because Hareo Ema Zeva, because the previously in the Pasuk we used the expression Zeva, but Oif ain't a Zeva. So a bird is not a Zeva, it's Yomalika instead, right? By the way, I mean, of course, Rav Yoshia would agree with that also. The fact is, Zevach doesn't include bird. However, what? No. We know that that's the one from the third, but that's outside of the connection. That's not a third.
Okay.
Yeah. No, but the Chiddush of Amichas and Marashka points out, of course, Rav Yoshia would have to agree that Oif is not Zevach. However, he would still say, fine, but if you didn't have the words Minabakar and Minasone, you would still think to include the bird on the basis of the word Oif. Therefore, you need Minabakar and Minasone to be excluded.
To exclude it.
In Kane, so
even when it was Zeva, you would include the
You would think, because they're Oila, yeah. In Kane,
Masa... Zeva,
yeah, that's all not birds, right. So you would think, because of Oila, maybe on the other hand, maybe Oila, maybe still included by the word Oila. Okay. In Kane, Masa, Minabakar, Minasone. So Rav Yonasan says, what are we learning from the words Minabakar, Minasone? So like this. Lefisha Nana, we have to go back to the beginning of Chumash Vayikra. When it says, Odom ki yachem mekem korban l'Hashem, a person from you, from among you, will bring a korban to a person who brings from among you a korban to Hashem. Mina behema, from the animal, from domestic animals. Mina boker and mina soin. Mina boker u mina soin, from the cattle and from the sheep. So the word, the vav can mean and. Yachol ha'omer harei olai ola yavi mishneim. So you would think based on that topic, maybe if a person voluntarily brings an ola, maybe he's required to bring both a cattle and a sheep. Because it says minabaka u minasoin. No, tama blame minabaka u minasoin. That is why our pasuk regarding the Nesachim uses the expression minabaka u minasoin, not to exclude birds, because those we know are already excluded from zeva, but to tell us that when a person is bringing a korban, it can be either baka or soin. Rasa echad maybe, rasa shnai maybe. A person wants to bring one individual animal, he can do it. If he wants to bring two, he can bring two, but there's no requirement to bring two. Okay. Thus far the brach.
Minabaka
u minasoin. Okay, so the question is, Rav Yonasan Lomalisa. Now the question is, why would Rav Yonasan need say that you need a separate pasuk to tell us that mina behema, mina baka, u mina soin doesn't mean both of them? Ha'omar, Rav Yonasan says, we have a concept in a number of places in Shas, we've had it in Bav Nasir, we've had it in a number of places in Sanhedrin also, that Rav Yonasan holds. So like this, when you have two things mentioned together in a pasuk with a vav between them, Rav Yonasan holds that by default, it means they're separate, unless the pasuk says the word yachzav. Ad sheyifrit machar pasuk yachzav. For example, you have by leitachrish b'shor of a chamor yachzav. If you didn't have the word,
uses the word that says the word yachzav.
When it actually uses the word yachzav, then it means both them.
That's
but otherwise, it says it means one or the other.
Yeah, where else does it say
yachzav? Yeah, I don't remember, but the point is, in other words, that for example, you have a pasuk that says makalim aviv ve'imoy mosi us. So Rabbi Yonasan says it doesn't mean that the person is chayav nisa only if he curses his father and his mother. It means his father or his mother.
No.
If it said obviously ima yachzav, it would mean they have to curse both of them to be chayav nisa. So Rabbi Yonasan in general says that when it says above, it means or. Well, Rabbi Yoshia disagrees with that. Rabbi Yoshia says only if it says oi. Only if it says this oi that doesn't mean one or the other. If it says this that, it means both of them. Yeah. It's a sugya. You have a whole sugya about it in Bav Nasiya. Yeah. So the point is, according to Rav Yonasan, why does Rav Yonasan need a pasuk that says minabaka or minasoin to teach us that a person can bring one or the other, if according to him, minabahema minabaka or minasoin already means one or the other? The answer is itzra. He would say you still need both specifics. Talk to that, Hamina, because otherwise you would think like this. Hoyol ksiv minasoin, because after all, since the pasuk in Vayikra continues and says, since it starts by saying minabaka and then it says minasoin, so therefore, command yachziv yachzav zami. So in other words, it's one thing, it starts off by saying, mina behema, minha boker, and then it says, mina son. So there's no vav before mina behema. And all of a sudden, you have over here, mina son. So therefore, you're
saying if you have the u, you don't need yachzav.
That's the point. In other words, you would think that maybe since, so you have a few different explanations, what exactly the limud is. Rashi, yeah, that's the point, though, that since over here, since the pasuk says mina boker and then it changes it, the next one, it says mina soin, then maybe it means specifically both of them.
It says mina
milk. It says mina, and then it says umi. No, it says mina behema, mina boker, mina soin. Right. Okay, so again, you have a few explanations. Tosfos says the point is that since it says mina behema and then mina boker u mina stone, then maybe it means both of them. Anyway, so you would think. So mandatim yachtav zom. You would think it's the equivalent of a saying yachtav, and therefore of Yonatan says, therefore I need a different topic that clearly uses the word oi to tell us that.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Then, it's not machman. Okay. What about the other way around? Or the Yoshia? What about according to the Yoshia? Dom afagab
de la
sin.
Since oi can mean either with.
No, no. Oi definitely means or.
Or.
The vav of uminaton, you might have thought meant both. In this one case.
Either one.
Yeah. Okay. All the Yoshia do afagab de la sin yachtav command sin yachtav zami. What about the other way around? According to the Yoshia who says even if it doesn't say yachtav in the pocket, when it says a vav, it automatically means both of them. According to him, you should need a prophet to tell you that if you bring an Ola, you're allowed to bring only one animal. The answer is, in Ola Kobani Minat Bakr, and then a few psukim later, the Minat Sain Kobani. Okay, we have the following psukim. It says, if his Kobani Ola is from the cattle, and then a few psukim later, and if his Kobani is from the sheep. So you see from that theory that it can be either a bull or a sheep, that it doesn't have to be both. So you don't need a different prophet, Ola Minat Sain, to teach us that. But either, what would Rabbi Yonatan answer to that? He would say, still, it's true, okay, but I still need my two psukim. Talk about Hamina, because you would think to make a distinction like this. Hani Mili B'mefarish. Rabbi Yonatan would say, okay, if a person clearly says, I'm going to bring a boker as an Ola, sure, he's only required to bring a boker. If he says, I'm going to bring only a son, he's required to bring only a son. But if he just says, Stam, I'm going to bring an Ola, Abba B'tzama, if he just says, Stam, I'm going to bring an Ola, life means Havara, maybe then he's required to bring both. On the basis of the Pasuk, Minat Boker or Minat Son. Kamash Malon, and that is why, Rabbi Yonatan says, that is why we have the Pasuk in Parashat Shlach, Minat Boker, or Minat Son, which makes it clear that there is never a time when a person is obligated to bring two animals for one Ola.
Even if he said,
obviously if he says, I'm going to bring a Boker or a Son.
If he says, Boker, then that's the point.
Since it says Boker, Bit Son, right.
Oi means either one.
Yes, yeah, so therefore, Oi clearly means either one. Yeah. Okay.